The other infections, for example, genital warts or the HPV infection, herpes simplex virus, these also produce a lot of concern in the woman when they are on their fertility journey, and something I think we can touch on as we go forward.
Definitely. Okay.
And of course, it goes without saying that the good old classical STI syphilis, there has been massive rise in the United Kingdom in the last 10 years. And in fact, one is more likely to get syphilis today among the blood infections rather than HIV. For practical purposes.
So I know STIs may well be something that you thought you didn't have to think about anymore, but that's why we wanted to bring in expert Dr. Malou for this episode of the Fertility Podcast to explain exactly what you do need to think about whilst you're trying to conceive. The episode's in two parts, so make sure you subscribe so you can hear part one and part two. For over 6 years now, the Fertility Podcast has been sharing content with you, talking about the A to Z of things that might be affecting your fertility. And as we head into our seventh year, things are changing. You see, the podcast is just a portal into a world of more support, which ultimately is what you need more than ever when you're trying to conceive. So who are we? Well, I'm Natalie Silverman. If you've listened to the podcast, you'll know. I used to be on the radio. I'm also a professional voiceover, so I basically talk a lot for a living. And I launched this podcast after successful fertility treatment. And in 2019, I brought in the brilliant Kate Davis. Kate is a fertility nurse consultant. You know what you're talking about, and you offer amazing clinical support.
I think it's great to give information out to people this way because it's so accessible. We know from talking to our guests that actually they love listening to it in this way because certainly with men, they can listen to it and no one else knows that they're listening to information about fertility.
Now, part of what is changing with the podcast is that Kate and I are offering an amazing support network. And so what we want to do is offer you the chance to be a patron of this podcast.
So what does all of this mean? You're going to get shout outs on the podcast and your name, if you want it, or it can be your social media handle, will be on the Fertility Podcast website. We're going to be having some awesome monthly get-togethers, and we're going to take the time to answer your questions and bring in some fab speakers. And if there's someone you've been really wanting to hear from, you can have a say on who we interview going forward, as we'll be running polls for you to vote on. You'll get early access to our episodes a week ahead of their release. Plus, there's going to be other really useful resources too.
So what you need to do is get on the case and join us today. It's very simple. Just go to patreon.com/thefertilitypodcast. The early years from the Fertility Podcast, where we aim to talk about the stuff you wish you had known before trying to conceive. Now, as you know, the Fertility Podcast is all about empowering you in the next steps in your fertility journey. And we're always delighted to find people who are on the same mission as we are. So we give a massive welcome to Merck, a new sponsor of the Fertility Podcast. They are a leading science and technology company with a rich history in the area of fertility. And with this experience, Merck has launched Bloom, a brand new website intending to provide you with information whether you're looking to start your family or grow it and you need some help on what you're going to do next. So to find out more, just visit merckbloom.com. So welcome to another episode of the Fertility Podcast. And we're putting a focus now on the early years with some of the conversations that we're having. And Kate and I were talking about different areas that we felt we hadn't covered. And we were talking about STIs, as you do, didn't we, Kate? We had a nice brainstorm talking about STIs.
We did. And we thought it would be a good one to start chatting about because clearly it impacts on your fertility.
I do think it's something that you kind of hear about, but I haven't read a lot or heard a lot about it, hence us wanting to talk about it. And we're going to welcome Dr. Manaj Malou to the podcast, who's a consultant in sexual health and the clinical director of Clarewell Clinics, which is based in Birmingham and Leicester. Dr. Malou, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Natalie.
And Kate, you and Dr. Malou are our colleagues, aren't you?
Yeah, we used to be. We go way back, actually. A few years ago, I was the locality manager for Lincolnshire Sexual Health Service, and Dr. Malou was one of my doctors. And we always got on really well, didn't we, Dr. Malou?
Absolutely.
And have since kept in touch quite a bit and followed each other's paths in the different way that our roles have taken us. So it's lovely to have the opportunity to chat properly and talk STIs with Dr. Malou again.
It's definitely something that I don't think I've spoken about since kind of, I don't know, early on in my relationships, let's say, and you'd kind of have these awkward conversations and you'd end up maybe having to go and have these checks. And Dr. Malou, do you think that when it comes to the understanding around the impact that STIs have on fertility, that men and women are aware enough?
That's a very, very important question when it comes to how STIs impact or potentially impact on our fertility particularly. I see two types of women. Women who become overtly anxious once they've been diagnosed with an infection, and whether it's chlamydia or gonorrhea or mycoplasma, and get it appropriately treated and sorted out. And whenever the opportunity arises or the need arises, they get themselves retested and get themselves diagnosed early. On the other hand, the vast majority of people are very reactive. They'll only react when they have got some symptoms or they have heard from a partner, they have got some infections down there, and they go for getting tested. They may have passing awareness about, okay, this may impact on the fertility and effect on the tubes and uterus, but I don't think they understand the seriousness of it well enough in most cases.
And I completely agree with you. And I remember, Dr. Malou, when we were working together in Lincolnshire, there was a huge push to increase the amount of chlamydia screenings that were done nationwide, not just in Lincolnshire, but nationwide. And so there was a massive emphasis about chlamydia. There was lots on the media. Everywhere you went, there were resources you could pick up, leaflets, posters. But actually, that seems to have quietened down over time. I guess a bit like with HIV, there was in the 80s, that was the big thing. And now there's less of attention on HIV, obviously, for obvious reasons. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely right. Because if you look at 10 years plus in the past, chlamydia was on everybody's lips.
Mm.
And now it is at the cusp of virtually disappearance. Not the infection itself, just the focus on it.
Yeah.
Because the infection is still there. It's rampant. The chlamydia screening program has been, for practical purposes, disappeared and get amalgamated into other STI services. And if you look at the number of cases, you know, the old good old statistics, 1 in 10, if you are between 18 and 24, which we used to discuss, the prevalence of chlamydia, still there.
Okay. So it's 1 in 10 in terms of chlamydia. And let's just talk for a moment about the other common sexual transmitted infections that you diagnose in women.
From the NHS perspective, an STI test consists of chlamydia,
yeah,
gonorrhea, syphilis, and HIV. And in select places, they can test you for Trichomonas vaginalis. The other common STIs that you might be interested in, because here we're talking about pregnancy and fertility, are Mycoplasma genitalium. This has been called superbug or potential superbug because it's not being tested at the moment in a manner and on a scale that it ought to be. And it behaves in a very similar fashion to chlamydia. So, and this impact on, you know, producing pelvic inflammation and potential fall in fertility or complete infertility is very similar. In fact, they go hand in hand in producing the same outcome, which many of your listeners may be interested in. And the other infections, for example, genital warts or the HPV infection, herpes simplex virus, these also produce a lot of concern in the woman when they are on their fertility journey, and something I think we can touch on as we go forward.
Definitely. Okay.
And of course, it goes without saying that the good old classical STI syphilis, there has been massive rise in the United Kingdom in the last 10 years. And in fact, one is more likely to get syphilis today among the blood infections rather than HIV for practical purposes.
You associate syphilis with kind of years back, don't you?
Henry VIII.
Yeah. Henry VIII is back in the times of COVID-19.
Yes, wow, interesting. So you mentioned there about pelvic inflammatory disease, Dr. Malou. How many women with untreated sexually transmitted infections will go on to develop pelvic inflammatory disease? And what will this look like for their future fertility?
A couple of points here. One is many of the women, even if the infection is left untreated, will clear the infections spontaneously over with the passage of time. And I'm talking about chlamydia.
Mm-hmm.
However, in many other women, this will produce low-grade inflammation in the pelvis. And when we pelvis here, we are mainly referring to the canal of the cervix, the lining of the uterus, the endometrium, and the lining of the tubes, the fallopian tubes, and the tubes itself. And sometimes this infection, the inflammation produced, can spill through the openings of the fallopian tubes into the pelvis per se. In many women, the level of inflammation is so mild, so little, that you produce no symptoms or minimal symptoms, which you can ignore as though, oh, it must be just my period pain, or, oh, I'm just a bit constipated. And smaller number of patients will have mild inflammation that quite often settles on itself. And there are a few women, obviously, who will have more severe disease. And these are the ones who really come to our attention and seek advice. A diagnosis is made and the treatment is given. Now, as regards the effect on fertility, there are two important factors one should consider. One is how often you get these episodes of PID. The greater number, the more frequently you get it, the greater the cumulative effect on the fertility. Second thing is the level of inflammation, how severe it is. Clearly, the more severe the inflammation or infection is, the greater the impact, negative impact on the fertility. However, if you look at the effect at the level of community, because most women have got mild or minimal symptoms, but recurrent episodes, in terms of effect on fertility, these are the ones who get the worst card of the pack, so to say.
So when it comes to some of the others you mentioned before, kind of herpes, for example, again, is that the same type of thing? It's the kind of number of cases and the severity of the breakouts, I suppose, that could then lead on to fertility issues.
With herpes and warts, don't produce infertility per se at all. However, they can take away the sleep in the middle of night for a lot of women who either have got these infections before, because these infections, at least in the, if you do your Google research, you'll find they can have quite devastating consequences in pregnant women. And I wanted to take an opportunity to touch on them basically to say that they don't have an impact on infertility, although a lot of people worry about it. So I wanted to make it clear it doesn't affect the fertility at all.
Right.
And even in terms of outcomes on the pregnancy and the delivery, it can be, with today's medical knowledge, can be very easily and well handled. So they don't need to worry about these things.
So we want to talk about the STIs and the impact on male fertility as well. And I'm curious as to whether part of the issue here is that normally when a couple, if we're talking about a heterosexual couple, for example, are talking about trying to have a family, they've possibly been together for long enough to think that STIs aren't really a concern, and maybe they've been forgotten about and not talked about. Do you think that's part of the problem in this awareness piece?
Of course it is. And in fact, this perception is borne by day-to-day experience in my clinics, that I see people who have been together for a reasonable length of time. Some of them are planning to have children, and some of them have already had children between them. And suddenly something happens and one of the diagnoses of STI is made. Is because it has not been looked for in the past. And one of those infections that I often see is Mycoplasma genitalium. And I was earlier referring to it. It's a common STI. It behaves in a very similar fashion to chlamydia. The problem is we have not tested for this infection for a long, long, long time. So many people, even if they have had the so-called, STI test for peace of mind, this has not included the Mycoplasma genitalium test. Likewise, even now, most clinics in the country, including the NHS, will not do this test as a matter of routine because of the access and the cost. For any of your listeners, who are taking their fertility seriously, I will request them to consider, even if they have no symptoms, and if they have been with, partners in the past, and if they want to have the complete peace of mind and want to ensure that residual Mycoplasma genitalium infection doesn't cause a problem, to get themselves, at least consider themselves to get tested. And once it's negative, it gives you long-term reassurance. If it's positive, then you handle the problem as it should be.
That's really good advice, because I think, as Dr. Mulley says, it's something that's not really known about and certainly not discussed enough. So that's really interesting. In fact, I've learned something as well.
And Kate, knowing what you know about the number of women and men who are given the unexplained infertility label. Do you think there needs to be more communication about STI tests when we're talking about unexplained infertility? Do we think that there's a disconnect there?
Well, from my point of view, and then maybe you can chip in from your side, but I think, and I know, Natalie, we've talked about this a lot, haven't we, about the fact that often there isn't this joined up working. And we've talked about, and you know, I get really cross when men aren't routinely referred to urologists when there seems to be potentially a male fertility factor issue. And it's this whole thing about IVF will fix it and we don't worry about the men. And I get really irritated by that. And I guess in the same token, you know, things that you've just discussed there, Dr. Malou, is that actually the need for more joined up working and perhaps in fertility clinics, this should be coming more important. There should be more emphasis on this because we know that we screen for chlamydia and we'll do a HIV test, but we're not really doing very much more than that.
Yes, I agree. And in fact, if I may suggest that with inflammation of epididymis, inflammation of the testicle, technical name epididymorchitis, is a counterpart of PID, the pelvic inflammatory disease in the woman. When you have got the signs and symptoms, if you run the chlamydia gonorrhea this test, the test may come back negative. Sometimes it's the inflammation, the chain of inflammation that has been set off by these infections to begin with. And the infection per se may have disappeared, but the consequence, the fire is still there causing the damage. And so a negative test result can give you a false sense of reassurance. That means you do not have the appropriate antibiotic for the proper length of time, you do not have any follow-up tests. And most importantly, you have missed an opportunity to get your partner tested.
Yeah.
Other thing is that when we do the STI test, it only looks for certain specific infections. We do know there are issues, for example, with seminal vesicles, with the prostate gland, and with epididymis, which cannot be picked up on any of these STI tests. They require proper clinical evaluation. And so when you're banking on just running some STI tests as packages, you're missing out on that opportunity to make an underlying diagnosis, which may be the cause of infertility or may contribute to future infertility.
So my question actually was going to be in with that situation is how would you therefore manage that, Dr. Malou, if a test was negative and that could be a routine test that is done at a fertility clinic or by a GP, but if there was potentially further issues, how would you manage that and what would your management treatment be?
My management treatment in these cases would be to look at the symptoms in a holistic manner, on long-term fashion, not just what is going on now, you know, what sort of symptoms you had in the past, what sort of sexual history you have had, what sort of exposures, potential exposures to infections you have had, what sort of STI diagnosis you have had in the past, and also looking at how well they were tested, how well they were treated at the time, what was the outcome, and what is the current state of play. You take into account all these before you come to formulate a management strategy. So there is an opportunity for custom making that treatment plan, management plan for individual patients and couples.
And if we're talking, for example, there's people that have had treatment halted due to the current lockdown situation. We're talking the kind of second week of May, well, whilst we're still in lockdown, and it might not be the case once this episode is shared. But one thing that we've been talking about is that this period has given people time to maybe think more about what they can do to optimize their fertility. And if people are in that kind of treatment course, but it's been halted, and they either got male fertility diagnosis, male infertility diagnosis, or it's unexplained, would your advice be to ask your clinic about whether it's worth testing for any of these STIs at this point, if they've been trying for a while and, you know, so maybe they've even had failed cycles?
I would think so, that if the due diligence has been incomplete in the past for whatever reason, there's always an opportunity to review the situation and do the tests that have not been done.
Okay.
And also, let's be in the real life. You know, I regularly see patients, you know, with utmost respect, where, you know, patients come and say, Dr. Malou, I'm so concerned because I had just one off, you know, when I was at work on a conference or on a holiday. And you know what? You know, I feel so gutted because I know that we are trying for a baby. So even if you are in apparently what's a committed relationship, you don't need to doubt your partner, but have a common sense approach. Like, you know, my health is important to me, and so is my sexual health.
Yeah.
So take an opportunity to get this test done, you know, at appropriate time, maybe perhaps once in a year, which is an opportunity to look at, you know, your overall health and take an opportunity to get some of these tests done. So yes, I'll recommend that even those who are already on that fertility, infertility treatment journey, consider that how thorough their workup has been in the past and if something is missing, time to seal the gap.
It's another option, isn't it? And that's what we're always trying to give our listeners, is the empowerment to know what could be underlying. Not that it definitely is. And we definitely don't want to start causing breakdowns in relationships doubt, because it's a stressful enough, you know, time for people. But I think it's a really, really like valid point that we overlook.
Yeah, we do.
May I make a point at this moment, Kate and Natalie? That is, chlamydia is a common infection. And at the moment, we have got the culture that if chlamydia test is positive, it just gives a course of antibiotics and complete the job. The reality is, the kind of course of antibiotics we give you and the length of it for what we call uncomplicated chlamydia infection is very short if somebody has got underlying PID. And remember, many patients who have got underlying PID will have no symptoms. The only way to check for a PID is by doing a clinical examination, a bimanual examination. Mm. So when you get your chlamydia diagnosis, and before you rush into treatment, ask yourself that has every consideration been taken into account when giving you the course of antibiotics and the length of it? Because I'm a great fan of online services and everything in the online. This is one area where I find the online services have been failing women, is not properly assessing if they have got underlying silent type of PID and therefore giving them the right amount of antibiotics for this infection.
That is great advice. You know what? I always love talking to you, Dr. Malou, because I always learn something and I love it. I'm definitely learning today. One thing that I want to talk to you about, because I do see a lot of women with this, and it causes me great concern when a woman is trying to conceive, is bacterial vaginosis. I know it's really common, but also I know that there are implications with regard to miscarriage. What should a woman do if she is concerned that she has been diagnosed with BV and she is trying to conceive?
And maybe just explain a bit about how it presents if people haven't experienced or don't know about it.
Yeah.
Bacterial vaginosis is extremely common. And essentially, the vagina is a closed compartment where there are different types of bacteria. Broadly speaking, they're called lactobacilli and also something called anaerobes, and they live in balance, in harmony. Sometimes this balance is disturbed, and that can lead to unusual discharge, thin, grayish discharge, which just flows a bit like milk, so to say, and also presence of smell. And the smell can get accentuated after sexual contact and also after having a period. Mm. Oh, it's not the period, it's the blood at the time of period. And therefore, if somebody has got bleeding between their periods, what we call intermenstrual bleeding or mid-cycle bleeding for whatever cause, even that can trigger these symptoms.
I know from my days of doing sexual health screens, BV is probably one of the easiest to diagnose by smell, isn't it? It's so, you so know it. You so know it.
Correct. Now, with bacterial vaginosis, it's important to understand what is triggering this imbalance and therefore the symptoms. I like to divide the causes of bacterial vaginosis in three groups. One is the factors from below. That means if somebody has got a new partner, got lots of partners, lot of sex, douching, super cleaning, etc., you know, sitting in the bath for too long, you know, the water and the other content that goes inside the vagina, it can disturb the balance and produce bacterial vaginosis. Then I look at the factors from above, cervix and above. So if there's any infection in the cervix, that produces extra discharge, extra, you know, inflammation. For example, chlamydia, gonorrhea, mycoplasma, trichomonas vaginalis, you know, plain cervicitis, even rip-roaring, good-going ectropion. All of these, because of the effect from above, they themselves can trigger bacterial vaginosis. And that's why we recommend that woman with bacterial vaginosis gets an STI test done to rule out underlying STIs. Because if you don't treat the underlying STIs, bacterial vaginosis will keep coming back. The other factors from above are the vagina is designed in a very simplistic manner, if you allow me to say that, is to have the flow of menstrual flow once in a month or so for a few days. So if a woman has got very heavy bleeding or bleeding for a long time, that can upset the balance as well. So in many such women, if you treat the underlying cause of the irregular bleeding or heavy bleeding, that also manages to reduce the chances of getting bacterial vaginosis again.
Don't miss part two of this interview with Dr. Malou in our next episode.
We hope you enjoyed the show. All the info of our guests will be just below this episode in whichever podcast app you're listening in.
And remember, if you do just one new thing today to help you get even more support on your fertility journey, why not become a Patreon of the podcast? Just visit patreon.com/thefertilitypodcast.